Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're digging into the Q3 FY25 quarterly report, and we're really zeroing in on what it means for you folks working in wealth management institutions.
That's right. We've gone through it all. Operational infrastructure, data strategy, investment approaches, employer stuff, cyber, even regulatory changes.
Yeah, quite a bit. So our goal here is to pull out the absolute essentials for you. You know, the actionable bits, the things that make you think, but without drowning you in detail.
Exactly. This report, it's a really useful snapshot of the super sector right now. It flags up the big challenges, but also, you know, the opportunities as well. We'll be getting into the core themes straight from the report.
Okay, let's jump right in then. Section one, superannuation's underdeveloped operational infrastructure. This really echoes that recent Kinexys Institute report, doesn't it? Where operational infrastructure was flagged as a major concern.
It does. And what's fascinating, and the report notes this, is that while everyone kind of agrees there's a problem, actually pinpointing what the specific problems are seems difficult.
Yeah, the quote was something like, "Everyone who commented thought there were problems, but could not put their finger on exactly what they were." Why do you think that is? That sort of general unease.
Well, I suspect it's partly down to just how complex and interconnected everything is in a superfund's operations. It's not always one single thing you can point to.
Makes sense.
But given our focus on data and tech, this report actually does start to put some shape on those shortcomings. It talks about core IT, interoperability, processes, staffing, the things vital for member services and admin.
And it deliberately sidesteps investments for now.
Mostly, yes. Though it does kind of cheekily acknowledge the investment world isn't always super slick either, mentions obscure widgets, spreadsheets, and a healthy dose of hope. But yeah, the focus here is member servicing and admin.
Right. So this sounds like the first in a series, and it outlines key areas. Let's start with core IT systems. What's the issue there?
The big ones are reliance on legacy tech, you know, old registries, workflow systems that just aren't very flexible. Plus, poor configuration or maintenance of things like CRMs or data platforms.
Or sometimes just nothing there.
Exactly. System gaps. And for wealth management professionals looking after these areas, that should immediately raise, well, red flags around data integrity, service efficiency, maybe even regulatory compliance.
Okay, what about interoperability? The report mentioned SuperStream is good, but...
But it's not enough. We need more standards for data exchange with administrators, custodians, insurers, investment managers, tech vendors. The whole ecosystem. Without that seamless flow, you get delays, errors, costs.
And it's not just the tech itself, is it? The report talks about processes being very manual.
Very manual, often poorly supported by IT, badly documented. It sounds like a lot of processes just sort of evolved organically, which means inefficiencies, potential mistakes.
Low automation.
Yeah, that's a big theme. The report really calls for redesign, more automation, and much better governance around how things are actually done. For listeners focused on efficiency, there are probably some big opportunities there.
Where would you start?
I'd look at those high-volume, repetitive tasks first, the ones prone to human error. See if intelligent automation can help.
Makes sense. And staffing.
Also critical. The report points to skills gaps, not enough training, and a dangerous reliance on just a few key people.
Creates vulnerabilities.
Huge vulnerabilities. So the call is for investment in training, clearer career paths to keep talent, and just being more proactive about finding the right people.
And finally, cybersecurity and financial crime.
Yeah, flagged as needing serious work. Despite regulatory focus, the report suggests maturity is lacking and that fragmented infrastructure makes monitoring and responding effectively much harder. So upgrade legacy systems, build capabilities, get real-time frameworks in place, embed that security culture.
So the overall message is commit to maturing operations.
Absolutely. Targeted strategies, ongoing commitment, it's foundational.
Okay, that leads nicely into section two. KYDSP, know your data, systems, and processes. It builds on KYC, obviously, but mentions ASIC chair Joe Longo pushing for KYB, know your business.
That's right. The suggestion is that recent penalties show some funds just don't have a good enough handle on their own internal workings.
And Longo's point is that this lack of grip at the leadership level on data, systems, processes is what ultimately hurts members.
Exactly. Which is why the report puts forward this KYDSP framework. Know your data, systems, and processes. It argues this is absolutely crucial for understanding and serving your members properly, especially for wealth management institutions.
But it acknowledges it's tough for leaders who are, you know, a bit removed from the day-to-day.
Yes. That distance makes effective information flow vital. The report suggests dashboards are a simple, powerful tool.
But often badly implemented. I think we've all seen those.
Poor implementation is common. So the report outlines what makes dashboards effective.
What are the key ingredients then?
First up, APIs and data accessibility. You need good, complete, sophisticated APIs so data flows smoothly into your BI platforms. Leaders don't need to code, but they need to ask the right questions about API capabilities.
Okay, and then data quality.
Foundational. Absolutely foundational. Leadership's ultimately responsible for accuracy, consistency, completeness, reliability. That means knowing what data you have, where it comes from, who owns it.
Proper data governance.
Exactly. Avoids misleading insights, avoids regulatory trouble. Then you need the right BI tools. Power BI, Tableau, whatever fits for interactive real-time insights, needs to match the organization's needs. Usability, scale, cost.
But it's not just about the tech, right?
Definitely not. The report stresses data literacy. Leaders need to actually understand the charts, question the assumptions behind the data. You need to foster that through training. It leads to better strategy, better decision.
And process confidence.
Yeah, knowing your processes are clear, documented, reliable, that the data going in is good, needs regular audits, continuous improvement. Leaders should be asking, do these processes still make sense? Do they align with our goals? What are the risks?
So mastering KYDSP through good dashboards, good governance, builds resilience, compliance, and better service.
That's the core message. Better knowledge, better outcomes for members.
Right. Let's shift gears to section three, data, investments, and a total portfolio approach. The report paints a picture of, well, quite a bit of uncertainty in the investment world. Old assumptions being questioned.
Very much so. Things like the role of the U.S. dollar, free trade, even rule of law in some places. It's all less certain. And this volatility is pushing institutional investors, like super funds, to look seriously at a total portfolio approach, or TPA.
Okay, so what exactly is TPA? How does it differ from, say, traditional strategic asset allocation?
Well, the report describes TPA as maybe less of a strict rule book and more of a, well, a vibe or philosophy.
Right.
But there's consensus on a few key things, like always thinking about the overall fund's risk return goals when making any investment decision, like looking for real diversification through low correlations between individual assets, not just broad asset classes.
So more granular.
Yes, and more collaborative across investment teams. It tends to be more CIO-centric and definitely more dynamic and responsive than traditional SAA.
And SAA is more about sticking to set allocations.
Pretty much. Maintaining consistent weights to different asset classes over the long run.
Does TPA actually perform better?
Interestingly, the report cites a 2024 study suggesting TPA users outperformed SAA peers by about 1.8% per year over 10 years. But, and it's a big but.
You need better data.
Significantly better data. Implementing TPA effectively is really challenging from a data management perspective. It demands much higher data and tech maturity than SAA.
And other trends are pushing this need for better data too, like regulation, climate disclosures, geopolitics.
Absolutely. All these things demand better look-through capabilities, especially into private markets, which just amplifies the data challenge for TPA.
So can you contrast the data needs a bit more clearly, SAA versus TPA?
Sure. The report lays it out well. SAA often works with siloed data, periodic updates, basic reporting. It focuses mainly on public markets, uses historical data for rebalancing, and is, you know, operationally simpler.
Where is TPA?
TPA needs unified data across everything. It needs data in near real time. It requires advanced analytics, covers public, private, alternatives. Decisions are dynamic, data-driven. And yeah, operationally, it's much more complex.
Is there an example of a fund tackling this?
The report mentions Aware Super's Project Odin, a big overhaul of their investment platform specifically to support TPA, including a new enterprise data management platform. It really shows the level of investment needed.
So what specific things does a platform need to support for TPA, according to the report?
Several key things. Centralization and collaboration are huge. The CIO needs timely, accurate, comparable data across all assets. Investment teams need shared data.
Makes sense. What else?
Analyzing correlations properly. That needs much richer data on individual investments to do quantitative and qualitative analysis at scale. Common standards and definitions are also vital. Think about ESG factors. You need consistent ways to compare them, translate them into data attributes, automate that.
Right. Consistency is key.
And finally, dynamism. You need that near real-time data feed, advanced analytics, risk models, decision support tools, all enabling those continuous data-driven adjustments, plus flexible governance and empowered teams.
So TPA demands better, faster, deeper data.
That's the bottom line. Build the right foundations now, and you'll be better placed to navigate whatever uncertainty comes next.
Okay, Section 4 moves on to superfunds, advertising, and employers. Stapling back in 2021 really shook up the default fund landscape, didn't it?
It really did. Changed the economics. Funds suddenly needed new ways to attract and keep members outside of those old default arrangements.
And now we've got payday super legislation coming. What does the report see happening as a result?
Well, it predicts we'll likely see more activity in two main areas. First, more advertising aimed directly at employers to win default arrangements.
And second.
Second, more advertising targeting employees during their onboarding process, trying to win new members or keep existing ones from switching.
Let's take the employer advertising first. What do funds need to offer employers now beyond just good member benefits?
The report says the value proposition has to be broader. Think streamlined admin for the employer, reduced overheads, help with compliance, maybe even providing software for clearinghouse or onboarding tasks.
Alignment on values, too, like ESG.
Increasingly important, yes. Employers want partners that reflect their own values.
But how do funds actually reach employers effectively? They're busy people.
Realistically, the report suggests we'll see much closer ties between funds and the payroll or HR software providers. Embedding fund info and selection tools right into those systems employers use every day.
So less about brochures, more about integration.
Probably. While you hope employers do deep research, the reality is that payroll system might become the main place the default decision happens for many.
Okay, what about advertising to employees during onboarding? The new legislation bans it, but with exceptions.
Exactly. There's a ban, but the employer's chosen default fund can advertise. And so can any MySuper product that passed the APRA performance test. The report thinks this clarity might actually increase advertising within those allowed categories.
Interesting. And there's a change with stapled funds, too. Employers can show the employee's existing fund?
Yes. They can retrieve and show the employee's stapled fund details before a choice is made. They don't have to, but they can.
So how might that look in a typical HR payroll system?
The report envisions a flow where the employee sees their stapled fund, the company's default fund, and maybe some other promoted funds, perhaps ones the software vendor has a deal with.
We're already seeing vendors doing this.
Yeah, the report mentions Super API, Employment Hero, MYOB are already offering similar things.
What about the money side? How do funds pay for this?
Various models could emerge, maybe just paying for display, maybe paying more for prominent placement, or maybe only paying if they actually get the member or the employer signs up.
Is there a risk this just becomes a costly merry-go-round? Lots of advertising spend, but not much actual change in member distribution.
That's definitely a risk-highlighted zero-sum churn. Could just add costs for members. It depends, I suppose, if this employer channel spending replaces less efficient advertising elsewhere.
And there's a loophole.
Well, a potential one. Currently, payroll software could promote funds without necessarily showing the stapled or default options clearly alongside. Might see future regulation there.
But the overall outlook is cautiously optimistic.
Sort of. Hopeful the industry uses this employer channel well in members' best interests. But it needs careful handling by everyone, funds, vendors, regulators, to avoid bad incentives or misleading members. Ultimately, maybe it leads to more informed choice.
Okay. Section 5. Time to pull your SOCs up. Cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Very timely, given the big super cyber attack earlier this year.
Extremely timely. And the report does acknowledge that existing compliance, like CPS 234 on info security, did help limit the damage in that case through faster detection and response.
But the threats are getting worse. Faster, more varied.
Constantly evolving, yes. Yeah. That's the backdrop. This section shares findings from interviews with industry leaders about their cyber concerns, especially around their security operations centers, their SOCs.
What did those interviews reveal about SOCs in the industry?
Well, most funds seem to have a formal SOC. 4 out of 5 respondents did. Some outsourced, some insourced, some hybrid. That choice often came down to their own internal tech capabilities.
But having a SOC isn't enough if it's not mature.
Exactly. And that was a key finding. 60% of majority felt their SOC needed to mature quite a bit.
What does an immature SOC look like, according to the report? What are the dangers?
Often it means the SOC doesn't understand the specific organization deeply enough, or there's too much reliance on a few key people, or the service level agreements aren't clear. The risk is you have this SOC, but it leaves you with blind spots, inconsistent response, still vulnerable.
And leaders want more than just monitoring. They want proactive protection.
Definitely. They want threat hunting, actively looking for trouble, proactive penetration testing, faster incident response, simulations, things that are really standard in modern SOCs now.
But the feeling is many aren't there yet.
The feeling reported was that many SOCs feel too reactive, not embedded enough within the organization's teams.
What about information sharing? Threat intelligence?
There's a strong desire for better, more integrated threat intelligence, behavioral analytics, industry-specific feeds to cut through the noise. Some felt the info from the ACSC, while valuable, can be a bit slow. Timely sharing is seen as crucial.
And reporting was a big pain point.
Huge pain point. Leaders want reporting that's near real time, easy for different people to understand, regulators, auditors, execs. They want it tailored to their business. Dashboards are preferred for that concise view.
But current reporting often falls short.
That was the sentiment. Not meeting expectations, not making it easier to show regulators that controls under CPS 234 and soon CPS 230 are effective.
So looking ahead, are leaders confident their SOCs are future-proof?
Not really. Only 25% felt confident their SOC delivers on the top priorities like prompt response and effective reporting. And a worrying 75% thought their current SOC isn't ready for the future.
So a big gap between expectation and reality.
A significant gap. The conclusion is SOCs need to mature fast, focusing on consistent, high-speed, high-accuracy service. Some providers really need to lift their game.
Okay, final section for our main discussion, section six, getting on with delivering better financial outcomes, DBFO Tranche 2. This is about getting more advice out to members, right?
Exactly. Building on efforts to make it clearer and easier for super funds to provide financial advice, especially given past legal uncertainties. DBFO Tranche 2, released in March, aims to smooth the path further.
What are the key changes it introduces?
Three main things highlighted. First, more clarity on when funds can collectively charge members for advice. Second, enabling targeted prompts or nudges. And third, replacing lengthy statements of advice, SOAs, with simpler client advice records or CARs.
And the report sees this as pushing funds towards digital advice.
Very much so. The view is that funds need to provide advice at scale, and digital is the key way to do that cost effectively. These reforms add reassurance for funds looking to expand their digital offerings.
Tell me more about the collective charging clarification.
It gives funds more confidence they can use collective fees, like a flat fee across members for advice covering a broader range of personal circumstances, things like contributions, investment choices, insurance, retirement income. The initial focus should probably be digital, with maybe in-person changes later.
Retirement income is a big focus.
Yes, given the regulatory focus on the retirement income covenant, the report suggests digital tools are ideal for guiding members through complex retirement topics, transition to retirement, pensions, drawdown strategies, interacting with the age pension.
Okay, and these nudges, how are they meant to work?
The idea is they're interventions that predictably alter behavior but are easy for the member to ignore if they want. The draft law confirms these targeted prompts aren't personal advice.
So funds can target groups based on their circumstances.
Yes, using email, mail, digital platforms, whatever. But crucially, the targeting needs to be appropriate, relevant to the group and the individual.
Which sounds like a data and analytics job.
Absolutely. Sophisticated targeting needs good data and advanced analytics. And then funds need to track if the nudges actually work. Did people take up that retirement product after the nudge? Measure it, ideally against a buff line, learn, improve? That's also a data and analytics problem.
Right. And finally, the client advice records, CRs. Simpler than SOAs.
Much simpler and shorter, yes. The focus shifts to helping the client understand and decide about the advice, not just ticking compliance boxes for the provider. And they can be tech-neutral video, interactive, digital formats.
So, an opportunity to improve the user experience.
Definitely. Could create really slick, user-friendly CARs, maybe even using things like AI video to complement a digital advice journey.
So despite maybe mixed reviews, the report sees DBFO Tranche 2 as another push towards better, especially digital, advice.
That's the takeaway. It's another incentive to improve advice offerings, and digital is seen as essential for doing that at the scale needed.
Okay, just to quickly mention the last couple of sections. Section 7 is a super reg update. Anything quick to highlight there?
Yeah, it notes ongoing work, helping clients adapt, focusing on data and IT. Key areas flagged are planning for payday super, the constant focus on fraud risk and information security, especially after recent breaches, and ASIC's sharp focus on improving death benefit claims handling after their recent critical report.
Right, lots happening on the regulatory front. And Section 8 is the M&A update.
Yes, that section just lists recent mergers and acquisitions activity in the sector funds combining, service providers merging. We won't go into the deals themselves today, but the list is there in the report.
Got it. So let's try and pull the threads together from those first six sections we discussed in detail.
Okay. So we covered the ongoing challenge of underdeveloped operational infrastructure, legacy IT, process issues, staffing gaps. Then the real need for funds to embrace KYDSP, knowing their own data, systems, processes inside out.
We talked about the shift towards total portfolio approach and investments and the much higher data demands that come with it.
Right. And the new dynamics playing out between funds, employers, and employees due to stapling and payday super legislation, particularly around advertising and onboarding.
Then the critical needs for security operations centers, the SOCs, to mature and become much more proactive in the face of rising cyber threats.
And finally, how the latest advice reforms, DBFO Tranche 2, are further encouraging that move towards providing advice at scale, especially using digital channels.
And all of this, as we've said, is directly relevant for you working in wealth management institutions. These trends impact your strategic planning, your operations, how you engage members, how you manage risk.
Absolutely. It's about thinking how these themes resonate with your specific context and what actions might be needed.
The whole super landscape keeps evolving, doesn't it? It really demands proactive adaptation and a commitment to using data and technology smartly. So maybe the final thought for you, our listener, is reflecting on all this, what stands out to you as the most significant area needing attention in your world over the next year?